Scrooge lived in chambers which had once belonged to Marley, his deceased partner. They were a gloomy suite of rooms in a lowering pile of a building up a yard, and nobody lived in it but Scrooge. The yard was so dark that even Scrooge, who knew its every stone, was fain to grope with his hands. The fog and frost so hung about the black old gateway of the house. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. It is also a fact that Scrooge had seen it night and morning during his whole residence in that place. Let it also be borne in mind that Scrooge had not bestowed one thought on Marley since his last mention of his 7 years dead partner that afternoon. And then let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw in the knocker, without its undergoing any intermediate process of change, not a knocker, but Marley's face. Marley's face. It was not an impenetrable shadow as the other objects in the yard were, but had a dismal light about it, like a bad lobster in a dark cellar. The hair was curiously stirred as if by breath or hot air, and though the eyes were wide open, they were perfectly motionless. That, and its livid colour, made it horrible. As Scrooge looked fixedly at this phenomenon, it was a knocker again. To say that he was not startled, or that his blood was not conscious of a terrible sensation to which it had been a stranger from infancy, would be untrue. But he put his hand upon the key he had relinquished, turned it sturdily, walked in, and lighted his candle. He fastened the door, walked across the hall and up the stairs, slowly too, trimming his candle as he went. But before he shut his heavy door, he walked through his rooms to see that all was right. He had just enough recollection of the face to desire to do that. Sitting room, bedroom, lumber room, all as they should be. Nobody under the table, nobody under the sofa. A small fire in the grate, spoon and basin ready, and a little saucepan of gruel upon the hob. Nobody under the bed, nobody in the closet, nobody in his dressing gown, which was hanging up in a suspicious attitude against the wall. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in. Double locked himself in, which was not his custom. Thus, secured against surprise, he took off his cravat, put on his dressing gown and slippers and his nightcap, and sat down before the fire to take his gruel. It was a very low fire indeed, nothing on such a bitter night. He was obliged to sit close to it and brood over it before he could extract the least sensation of warmth from such a handful of fuel. The fireplace was an old one, paved all round with quaint Dutch tiles, designed to illustrate the scriptures. There were Cain's and Abel's, Pharaoh's daughters, queens of Sheba, hundreds of figures to attract his thoughts, and yet that face of Marley, 7 years dead, came and swallowed up the whole. "Come, Doug," said Scrooge, and walked across the room. After several turns, he sat down again. As he threw his head back in the chair, his glance happened to rest upon a bell, a disused bell, that hung in the room and communicated for some purpose, now forgotten, with a chamber in the highest story of the building. It was with great astonishment and with a strange, inexplicable dread that as he looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. It swung so softly in the outset that it scarcely made a sound. But soon it rang out loudly, and so did every bell in the house. This might have lasted half a minute or a minute, but it seemed like an hour. The bells ceased as they had begun, together. They were succeeded by a clanking noise, deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain in the cellar. Scrooge then remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were described as dragging chains. The cellar door flew open with a booming sound, and then he heard the noise much louder, on the floors below, then coming up the stairs, then coming straight towards his door.
"It's humbug still. I won't believe it."
His colour changed, though, when, without a pause, it came on through the heavy door and passed into the room before his eyes. Upon its coming in, the dying flame leapt up as though it cried, "I know him, Marley's ghost." The same face, the very same. Marley in his pigtail, usual waistcoat, tights and boots, the tassels on the latter bristling. The chain he drew was clasped about his middle. It was long and wound about him like a tail, and it was made of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. His body was transparent, so that Scrooge, observing him and looking through his waistcoat, could see the two buttons on his coat behind. Scrooge had often heard it said that Marley had no bowels, but he had never believed it until now. No, nor did he believe it even now. Though he felt the chilling influence of his death-cold eyes, he was still incredulous and fought against his senses.
"How now? What do you want with me?"
"Much."
"Who are you?"
"Ask me who I was."
"Who were you, then? Are you your particular for a shade?"
"In life I was your partner, Jacob Marley."
Can you sit down?"
"I can."
"Do it, then."
The ghost sat down on the opposite side of the fireplace, as if he were quite used to it.
"You don't believe in me."
"I don't."
"Why do you doubt your senses?"
"Because a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheats. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are."
At this, the spirit raised a frightful cry and shook its chain with such a dismal and appalling noise that Scrooge fell upon his knees and clasped his hands before his face.
"Mercy! Dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me?"
"Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?"
I do. I must. But why do spirits walk the earth, and why do they come to me?"
"It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me! And witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth and turned to happiness."
Again the spectre raised a cry and shook its chain and wrung its shadowy hands.
"You are fettered. Tell me why."
"I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? Or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was full as heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain."
Scrooge glanced about him on the floor, in the expectation of finding himself surrounded by some 50 or 60 fathoms of iron cable, but he could see nothing.
"Jacob? Old Jacob Marley. Tell me more. Speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. It comes from other regions, Ebenezer Scrooge, and is conveyed by other ministers to other kinds of men. Nor can I tell you what I would. A very little more is all permitted to me. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger anywhere. Mark me. In life, my spirit never roved beyond the narrow limits of our money-changing hole, and weary journeys lie before me.
But you were always a good man of business, Jacob,
faltered Scrooge, who now began to apply this to himself.
Business? Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate, a chance and hope of my procuring Ebenezer.
You were always a good friend to me. Thank you.
You will be haunted by three spirits.
Scrooge's countenance fell almost as low as the ghosts had done.
I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls one. Expect the second on the next night at the same hour, the third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased. Look to see me no more, and look that for your own sake you remember what has passed between us.
When it had said these words, the apparition walked backward from him, and at every step it took, the window raised itself a little, so that when the spectre reached it, it was wide open. Scrooge became sensible of confused noises in the air, incoherent sounds of lamentation and regret. The spectre, after listening for a moment, joined in the mournful dirge and floated out upon the bleak, dark night. Scrooge closed the window and examined the door by which the ghost had entered. It was double locked, and the bolts were undisturbed. He tried to say humbug, but stopped at the first syllable, and being much in need of repose, went straight to bed without undressing, and fell asleep upon the instant.